Welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us, and we're going to have an interesting show today. We're going to be covering the subject of picking the right health plan for you, and this is the kind of situation that you can make or lose $1,000 to $2,000 next year. If you choose the right plan, you can save that much. If you choose the wrong plan, you can pay out that much in premiums and out-of-pocket costs. And our guest expert today is David Snell. He was a longtime official with the Office of Personnel Management, now with the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, based over in Alexandria. David, are you with us?
I am, Mike.
Hey, thank you for coming on today. With you, I feel like I could just say, here it goes, and leave the room. But trying to think of asking you intelligent questions. I guess the bottom line is to kind of remind people why they buy health insurance. And I guess the ultimate thing is for the catastrophic coverage, correct?
That's correct. I mean, insurance is all about risk and protecting yourself against something catastrophic happening that would wipe you out financially. So that's why we have all kinds of insurance for all kinds of things. And, of course, health care insurance is almost a necessity these days unless you're independently wealthy in order to cover those expensive medical costs.
Well, you know, someone constantly reminds me that Christopher Reeves, the movie star, who was fabulously wealthy, had that accident riding a horse, and he died broke, and his wife had to go back to work. I mean, so it can happen to anyone, even if you're very, very rich.
It can. Luckily, federal employees, their families, federal retirees and survivors are covered with a very, very good employer-sponsored health plan, the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program. And like most employer-sponsored plans, the government is going to pick up a share of the premium, and the enrollee will pay the rest of the premium. And for that, you get pretty good comprehensive benefits packages, including prescription drugs. And for many people, especially the retirees, those prescription drug coverages are like gold in the bank.
Can you tell us some of the plans that have the what you'd call the best prescription coverage?
Well, I think Blue Cross and Blue Shield Standard and Basic, actually, both have very good prescription drug coverage. Some of the others, GEHA has good prescription coverage until you need brand name drugs. Their copays for that are a little bit higher than the Blue Cross and Blue Shield. NALC has got a very good prescription drug benefit. But all in all, nobody will go wrong with any of these plans because they're going to get those prescription drugs covered in part, if not in whole.
Right now, are there any plans that are weak in prescription drug that you would, if that was the primary reason other than catastrophic coverage that you were purchasing the plan, are there any that you tell people to stay away from?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay. Okay. Now, we're looking at this, catastrophic coverage prescription, and one of the problems is we have an open season every year. The government spends a lot of money on it. Many federal agencies have now subscribed to the Washington Consumer Checkbook Guide so their people can log on and find their best health plan that way. Even with all of the health, and of course we have radio shows like this too, but with all of the help and advice that federal workers and retirees get, the vast majority do nothing, correct?
That's correct. At least they did up until this year. As you know, there's a new type of enrollment being introduced for 2016, and that's the self plus one. And from what we're hearing, from what the phone calls and emails we're getting, there's going to be a lot of activity this open season. Lots of people are finally moving and changing from self and family to a self plus one, in most cases saving themselves some out-of-pocket money. And with no cost of living increases for 2016, with the premiums going up as they are and do every year, Medicare premiums going up. Any way that an enrollee can save some money, save some out-of-pocket expense, is worth looking into. And the Self Plus One, for most plans, is a little bit cheaper than the Self and Family.
Well, I think you said the magic word there, a little bit cheaper, because what we're hearing here exclusively is from people who said, hey, I thought this Self Plus One was going to save a lot of money. I look at the premiums. They're almost identical to the family plan. And in at least one case, I think the Self Plus One costs more than one of the family plans being offered. And so many people are, you know, expressing anger and concern over this because they thought they were going to save big. You know, you're talking about couples without children or couples whose children are 26 or have left the nest. And they thought they were in for big savings. But I remember talking to you about this years ago, and you warned that this was back when Self Plus One was just a twinkle in some congressman's eye. But I remember you saying it might not save any money in the long run.
That's correct. It all has to do with demographics. And if couples who are older, retirees, who in fact cost a great deal more to cover as far as benefits go, if they're going to be in a Self Plus One, if they're going to pretty much fill up that type of enrollment, then the premiums aren't going to be that much different than the Self and Family. So in this year, there are some cases where the Self Plus One premium is actually a little higher than the Self and Family. But that has more to do with the formula that's used to arrive at the government share of the total premium. And what's left over, of course, is the enrollee share. And in some cases, the enrollee share for the Self Plus One is higher than the Self and Family. But that's not true in all cases. There are cases where the Self Plus One is considerably lower. I can tell you, GEHA standard, it's considerably lower. Same with the mail handler's standard is a little lower. But there are other plans, like I said, a few other plans. About 5% of enrollees in Self Plus One are going to be paying actually a little bit more if they choose to go to Self Plus One. And I, you know, my advice is if you're in Self and Family and it costs you more to go to Self Plus One, stay in Self and Family. One of the questions we get a lot of is, well, if I go to Self Plus One, am I losing any benefits? And the answer is absolutely not. You still get the same benefits, whether you're in Self and Family or Self Plus One or Self Only. And so if it's to your advantage, if it's going to cost you less to go to the Self Plus One, do so. If it's not, don't. Stay with Self and Family.
Okay, I think the real story on this the selfie plan is down the road, and as you said, it will depend on who goes into it this year for next year, who goes into it next year for 2017, and if you have a lot of heavy users, we're talking primarily about older people and retirees. If you have a lot of them moving into the Self Plus One, you know, just a husband and wife situation, then their premiums could exceed a family plan, I would assume.
Exactly. And as you point out, after 2016, the plans will have a year's worth of experience in covering benefits for the Self Plus One and will offer their premium costs to the government based on that experience. I think this past year, the Office of Personnel Management used the Self and Family and modified it a bit to come up with the rates for the Self Plus One, since they didn't have any history. So, but yes, as you stated, Mike, with 1 year's experience of paying benefits, the plans will have a much better idea of what it's going to cost the government and the enrollee for these Self Plus One types of enrollment.
My guess would be, and it's based on absolutely nothing except a conjecture, is that if the number of people who change plans remains low, then particularly the retiree group, they'll stay put no matter what. If that happens, then the Self Plus One premiums may not change very much. But if a lot of people, particularly heavy users, migrate into the Self Plus One, then the premiums in 2016 for 2017 could go up dramatically, correct?
That's correct. It could.
Okay. Just listen, we have to take a short break here. I'm talking with David Snell, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. We'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with David Snell. He's Director of Retirement Benefits at the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. David was at the Office of Personnel Management for many, many years, so he knows this the benefits level and particularly the health insurance like the back of his hand. David, thank you for being with us. And before the break, we were talking about Self Plus One. I wanted to ask you about retirees versus active duty workers. Now, obviously, retirees are older than active duty workers. NARF, your organization, they specifically in it say National Active and Retired Federal Employees. So you have members in both camps. You have people who are still working. You have some people who probably just started working for the government. You have a lot of people who are retired. What's the difference in shopping for health insurance if you're active versus retired, or is there any?
Well, I think that the main two areas that everybody, whether you're active or retired, need to look at are, one, your medical needs. That's the most important. Which plans are going to provide you with the best services for what you can foresee or what you have currently? And then after that comes finances. What can you afford the best that gives you the most bang for your buck? I think the younger active employees who don't use as much probably would migrate to a low premium but high deductible health plan in order to save out-of-pocket costs, because they're just not going to use their insurance as much, and some of those high deductible health plans can help them save money. On the other hand, I don't think the high deductible plans and those deductibles can reach thousands of dollars a year before your plan even kicks in. Would be good for retirees who are on a fixed income and use their plan a lot. So I think those are the main two things. The catastrophic coverage, of course, is important, especially if somebody is suffering from a real serious medical condition and use an awful lot of health care. I think for seniors, if they are in have a medical condition, they use a lot of the of their federal benefits now, and they become eligible for Medicare, they should probably take advantage of Medicare Part B and enroll in it in order to help those out-of-pocket costs.
Well, that was going to be my question, too, and this is one of the things that we get asked the most and I know the least about, is if you're a Fed or a retiree, should you take Medicare Part B? And what is Part B?
Part B is the part of Medicare that covers your physician and medical expenses. Part A, everybody has paid into while they were employed, and it's premium-free once you become eligible at age 65, and that part of Medicare pays for your in-hospital costs if you were to be taken to a hospital and you had to stay in there. The Part B, again, is physicians and tests and medical services and that sort of thing. But that comes with a premium. And, Part B is there for just about all Americans who want to enroll in it. But it's going to cost a premium in addition to your federal plan. So people need to think, a little about that before they just wake up at age 65 and run to Social Security and sign up for Medicare Part B.
Now, if you don't sign up for Medicare Part B at age 65, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, then if you decide to sign up later, there's a penalty. Is that right?
There is a late enrollment penalty, and the penalty is 10% of whatever the current Medicare premium is for every 12 months that the individual was eligible to enroll in Medicare and did not. I think for a lot of folks who are not sure about Medicare, they should probably wait a year or two. The 10% on top of the Medicare premiums each year is not going to make or break, and then see if they later on need it, they can enroll. The great thing about both the federal plan and the Medicare plan is that you have options. There are enrollment periods for both, and you can hold off and see if you need the Part B, save yourself some premium money in the meantime, and then at a later date, if you decide you need the Part B or things are looking like you will, then go ahead and enroll, pay the higher premium, but get that full coverage together with your federal plan.
Well, I know some people, and I've heard from others, who say, I won't get to Medicare. I won't get Part B. I'll save that that money. I'll save, what is it, a couple hundred bucks a month. I'll save that money, and then if later on if I need it, I'll get it. But I don't think they actually save it. I don't believe they're taking it to a bank and putting in that in the bank to have. It's just more spending money for them. Would that make a difference in your plans?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the whole idea of saving money in one pot is so you can spend it in another. You have that money to that extra money to pay gas or you know, go out to dinner or whatever you want to do. Over a period of a year, you're talking $1,200+. Certainly, if you're in pretty good health and your federal plan is providing all the services you need, there's no need for you to spend that $1,200 on another insurance program. Use it for something that you need. And later on, if you have to go or feel you need to enroll in Part B, then so be it. But in the meantime, in the years intervening, you've saved a lot of money from being spent on insurance that's duplicates what you already have under the federal plan.
Well, you said earlier, you're talking about the high deductible plans. They're the HD, high deductible, the CD, consumer driven. And the premiums are low, but that's because they have a higher deductible, obviously. Are these good for, I know Walton Francis, who writes the checkbook, refers to the savings accounts you can get out of these. How do those work?
Well, the savings accounts are tax-free dollars in the case of health savings accounts that can be used for health care and pay for a lot of things that you would normally pay out of pocket. In that case, you get a good deal on both ends. I mean, anybody can save money to do that, but in this case, the money you save is tax-free money in the sense that it comes employees. It will be deducted from your health benefits without being charged toward your taxable income. So these are good plans for, I think, young folks who want to save money, don't use their health plan much, so they pay lower premiums. They've got a health savings account that they can use to help pay for those few out-of-pocket expenses they do have.
Well, not to confuse things, but is this more like a Roth IRA?
I wouldn't call it. I wouldn't go that far.
Okay, because it's not your money. It's the money that the insurance plan puts into an account for you?
They contribute the money, it's not taxable. It's not considered to be income, and you use it for your health expenses.
And you can roll this over, correct?
In some cases, you can. Now, if you're under a health reimbursement arrangement, you can't roll it over. So, I mean, these are all under IRS rules. Health reimbursement arrangements are similar. If you're retired and enrolled in Medicare, you can still use a health reimbursement arrangement. You can't have a health savings account if you're retired and having and enrolled in Medicare.
Now, a lot of retirees are in Blue Cross Blue Shield. In fact, I guess it's the most popular plan. So many feds and most retirees are in it. And we need to take a short break here. But when we come back, I want to ask you about the difference between the Blue Cross Standard and the Blue Cross Basic plans. Be right back here on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with David Snell from the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. David was with the OPM for many years, and he knows this health insurance business like few others. David, before the break, I said I was going to ask you the difference, if any, in the Blue Cross plans. These are the most popular, and these are the ones that most retirees are in, and there is a standard option and a basic option. What's the difference?
Well, the difference, for the most part, is going to be under the basic, you're restricted as to what benefits Blue Cross is going to pay. Under the basic, you must use the Blue Cross Blue Shield providers, preferred providers, or you won't get any benefits. And that's not true with the standard, obviously. You always get a better break if you use preferred providers, but under the standard, you can go outside their preferred providers and still get coverage. Under the basic, that's not true. On the other hand, under the basic, there is no annual deductibles to be met. Under the basic, for 2016, and this is the first time they've offered this, for 2016, under the basic, Blue Cross and Blue Shield will offer mail order prescription drug benefits, meaning that if you need a 90-day supply, you can order it through the mail order prescription program and get a cut, a break on the cost over if you had to go to your retail pharmacy and buy your prescription drugs 30 days, 60 days at a time. Now, the catch on that is that you have to be enrolled in Medicare Part B in order to be able to use that mail order prescription program, but it is going to be available in 2016. I think the other big difference, of course, is in the premium costs. The basic monthly premium cost, the biweekly premium cost is considerably lower than the standard. So for those folks who are in Medicare, enrolled in Part A and B. Since Medicare, as a retiree, Medicare is your primary, and your federal plan is your secondary coverage, it makes sense not to spend a lot of money on your federal plan. If you're in a higher cost plan, you might want to think about dropping down to a lower cost, lower premium plan if you have Medicare Part A and B, because it's just your federal plan at that point is just going to supplement your Medicare coverage.
Now, I'm looking at the premiums here, and for self only, the difference between the Blue Cross Blue Shield basic and the standard is about $1,000 a year. It's $1,780 for the basic for a single person, and $2,600. That's what the employer retiree would pay for the standard option. Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right.
Okay, so it's about $1,000 a year, a little less than that.
Yes, and that's another way that you can save some money and use it for something better. So, again, if you're covered by Medicare Part A and B, and you have a federal plan that's costing you a considerable amount of money, and some of these plans went up a lot. I mean, the standard self and family went up $54. For 2016 a month, and the enrollee share. So it's going to be $516.18 a month next year. That's a pretty big jump. APWU self and family went up $150 a month, just the enrollee share for 2016. So if you're in Medicare Part A and B, by all means, look around for a lower-cost federal plan. Now, you mentioned life's events, qualifying events regarding changes. One of the qualifying events that retirees have is turning age 65, becoming eligible for Medicare. Anytime after that point, if a retiree wants to make a change in their health benefits under the federal plan, they can do so outside of the open season. They can only do it once, but it is a qualifying life event that they can use outside of the open season to make a change in their health care. So if they want to coordinate that with their enrollment with Medicare Part A and B, that's a good time to do it.
And the reason they can only do it once is because you only turn 65 once, correct?
That's what I hear.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's kind of good news, too. That's a good segue to this. There are a number of other qualifying events that workers and retirees have that allow them to have their own open season. For instance, if you got divorced and you wanted to go to a self-only plan, or if there was a death of one of the spouses, what are these qualifying events?
Well, they are events that in which your family or your personal circumstances or your job circumstances change. If you are in an HMO and you move out of the service area for that plan, you have an opportunity to enroll in another plan. If you get married and all of a sudden you have more than one person enrolled, you can change to a self plus one or a self and family. If somebody passes away or you lose a member and through divorce or death, a dependent, the enrollee can change from self and family or self plus one to self only. Normally, the federal employees, if they're going to change, must do so during the open season, especially if they're going to go from a self and family to a self plus one or a self only, unless there's one of those qualifying events. Retirees, on the other hand, are eligible to go from self and family to a self plus one or to a self only at any time during the year. And there's a big difference between the two, and it's probably because of the fact that their premiums, the Fed's premiums, are being withheld from their pay prior to taxes being applied to that. So, and that's something the retirees, although NARF has been fighting to try and get that for retirees, that's something retirees don't enjoy.
Okay, I hear every open season from number of couples, and they have questions like this. One of them is, I'm going to keep working. My significant other is retired. Which one of us should have the family plan, or does it matter?
Yes, it does matter. Premium conversion is the term used where the federal employee enrollee can have their premiums withheld from their pay prior to taxes being applied to that gross. So they, in effect, get tax-free. Their gross income is a little lower, and helps their taxes. So in the case where you have a active federal employee and you have a new retiree, it would be best if the retiree would go under the spouse's plan, the spouse change to a self plus one or self and family, and have those premiums withheld from their federal pay because they're going to get a tax break on that. And the federal retiree is going to be a dependent and won't know the difference as far as benefits.
Now, so, when one retires and one continues to work, or if they're both retired or if they're both working, if you divorce, what happens?
When the divorce becomes final, then the spouse, that whoever is not the enrollee, the dependent spouse, is no longer eligible for coverage under that enrollee's plan. If the divorce decree awards a part of that individual's retirement or future survivor benefit, then the former spouse can enroll in their own right. They'll have to pay a larger part of the premium if their benefits don't start until their spouse dies, but they can still continue coverage under the federal plan.
Now, is that if both were federal workers or both were federal retirees, it looks as if even if they had a family plan, if they got divorced, each one would be entitled to a self-only plan.
Yes, they. If they're both federal employees, that's for sure. They could still have their own federal plan. If they were retirees, then it would be necessary to make sure that both of them, certainly the enrollee that had the enrollment at the time of the divorce, but make sure that the spouse was also met the eligibility requirements to have health benefits on his or her own right.
Okay. Yeah, and this is the kind of thing about when people are retiring, they should consider the possibility. You know, maybe your parents were married for 50, 75 years, but it does happen. So these people should consider this when picking a health plan, right?
Right. And they can keep that in mind. I don't know that they ought to dwell on it, but, yeah. You know, that's certain. Certainly the rules ought to be in the back of their heads, or they ought to be aware of them. And again, it's only at the time of divorce or death. If you're separated, the spouse is still an eligible family member until that divorce becomes final.
Okay, well, we need to take a short break here. Be right back here on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with David Snell. He's Director of Retirement Benefits for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. David, what about people who are not covered? Do they, if they choose not to be covered under this, A, they ought to have their head examined, but B, what does the Affordable Care Act do to them?
Well, it provides them an alternative. I don't know that the Affordable Care Act, they have different grades of benefit packages offered under that, and with each one of those is a different premium. But they can certainly enroll in one. If their state runs their own state exchange, then they have benefits under that. Otherwise, the federal government will run the Affordable Care Act plans that are available to those people, You know that members of Congress now are no longer eligible for the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program. They have to go under the state exchanges, the Affordable Care Act. So that's an alternative, certainly out there and offered by the federal government to fill that gap of people whose employers do not offer employer-sponsored health plans and who can't afford their own as an individual. So the Affordable Care Act provides those plans for people to enroll and get some coverage, and depending on how much you pay, it will depend on what the level of coverage is.
Well, that makes me think of two things. One is traditionally members of Congress and federal workers have pretty much the same benefits.
Right.
The congressional retirement system is better, but they pay more into it, don't they?
They pay more into it, and of course they don't know how long a career
they have,
which is why they have a little bit more generous benefit. That's true with firefighters,
yeah.
Law enforcement people, air traffic controllers, because of the, in some cases, mandatory retirement ages. They get a little bit more generous.
Right.
They pay a little bit more, but they get a little more generous.
But the bottom line is they're pretty much under the same systems and pay more or less the same things. Some people have speculated that now that Congress has taken itself out of the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program and they're under the Affordable Care Act, in this case the state exchange, I guess it's the District of Columbia state exchange, but now that they're out of that, could that be a bad news for the FEHBP down the road?
NARF is certainly watching that. You've heard of slippery slopes, camel's nose under the tent. Once you set a precedent, and then it's easier and easier for Congress or the administration to use that as an excuse to further cut benefits from other federal employees or groups of employees. So NARF is very aware of that. We're very sensitive to it, and we're very watchful.
Yeah, anytime Congress removes itself from the civil service portion of the government package, that potentially takes away some protection for that benefit for people who remain under it, in this case the vast majority of federal workers. The other thing I was going to ask is, in mid-November, the New York Times had a very interesting, comprehensive piece about some of the problems in the second year of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and they said that many people were being hit by staggering deductibles.
Mm-hmm. I heard that. I saw that. Yeah.
And that doesn't happen in the federal employee health benefits program, does it?
Well, not staggering. It doesn't happen to the same degree each year. Deductibles will change over a period of time, but it's nothing that's going to absolutely stun folks from one year to the next. The whole idea of the employer-sponsored health benefits and having one big risk pool is that it helps keep the cost of covering these benefits down. So you'll find the plans will increase their co-payments a bit, their co-insurance a bit, in addition to increasing their premiums in order to keep up with the bills they have to pay. But the deductibles aren't going to change dramatically from one year to the next.
Right. In that respect, the federal health plan is much better than I would assume that what's offered under the Affordable Care Act.
I would think so. There are many federal programs out there, the Affordable Care Act just being one of them, or the plans under it, the state exchanges. And the federal employees' health benefit program laws allow for retirees to suspend their federal plan if, in fact, they are enrolled in one of these other federal plans, for instance, if they're enrolled in TRICARE, TRICARE for Life, if they're enrolled in CHAMP VA, covered by Peace Corps as a Peace Corps volunteer, enrolled in Medicaid. Those are programs that a federal retiree can ask the Office of Personnel Management to suspend their federal employees' health benefits plan enrollment and not pay those premiums, but allows them to, at a later date, if they wish, to come back into the federal program. If a retiree cancels, you may know, their enrollment, they can't get back in the federal program unless they go back to work sometime. But under these provisions, if they can suspend their enrollment, and that's a temporary cancellation, and then later on, if they wish to do so, either if they lose the other benefits, or at the next open season, then you can re-enroll back into the federal employees' health benefits.
I want to ask you about the difference between an HMO and I guess they call them fee-for-service or a national plan. Now, there used to be a tremendous difference between them. Now they seem to have taken on characteristics of each other.
Yes, they did. The fee-for-service plans now have preferred provider organizations and networks. You can still go outside of those networks other than plans like the Blue Cross Blue Shield Basic and still get some benefits covered. HMOs, of course, the health maintenance organizations, are there to maintain health care, and they have their own providers, their own networks, their own hospitals, their own medical facilities that you have to use. If you go outside, you have to have their permission to do so, or they won't pay any benefits. But you hit it on the head, Mike, the fee-for-service plans seem to be more and more drifting toward restricting who you see and where you get your services for less out-of-pocket costs. And we'll see if this managed healthcare kind of system is supposedly to help stem the cost of healthcare, keep the premiums for the enrollees down, and we'll see how that's going. But, more and more you'll see that in these fee-for-service plans.
Well, in some ways they've adopted the best of each other, haven't they?
I think so. But for the HMOs, your out-of-pocket expenses still a little bit lower than they are for the fee-for-service plans. Your co-pays, co-insurance, that sort of thing are usually a little bit lower. So it's still not costing you as much, I think, on an individual service basis when you go see a doctor or go have a test with the HMO if you use their providers. But they are kind of restrictive. It's another reason why if you are in an HMO and you're eligible to enroll in Medicare, maybe Medicare Part B would be a good decision because it allows you to go outside that network and still get benefits paid.
Right, and the savings would be in the premiums then if you were an HMO.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think too, it seems to me people who like HMOs love them. In some cases, it's one-stop shopping, so you can go into their facility, and there are a variety of doctors there that you can make appointments with, and they are, in effect, your preferred provider. But they're there on hand. There's very little paperwork. The copays are minimal at best. And one thing that a lot of people like is that the HMOs seem to stress preventive care.
A lot of preventive care, and the fee-for-service plans are catching on. But you're absolutely right, Mike. Just for an example, Kaiser has a plan out in California. They've split it between Northern California and Southern California. But the members that we talk to, they're just never going to leave that plan. Similar to the people that are in Blue Cross are not going to leave Blue Cross to go to another fee-for-service plan. These folks are just so satisfied with the Kaiser California plans that they gripe about the cost, but they're not going to get out of them.
I was out visiting with the California Federation earlier this year. It was tough duty, but it had to do it. San Luis Obispo, beautiful, beautiful place. But yeah, the people there are very, very happy for a lot of reasons, and one of them is that particular system. All right, well, David Snell from NARF, thank you very much for being with us. It's been a big help today, and we'll be talking to you, I hope, before the next open season.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, David. And thank you for being with us. Have a good week, and we'll see you here, we hope, next Wednesday at 10 a.m.